Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, friends. Post-production Mercedes. And how do I explain this? So we had technical difficulties again now for the second time. I think we have diagnosed the problem. However, because of these technical difficulties, Rachel basically disappears halfway through the podcast. And the reason I am giving you a heads up here at the beginning is because we did not realize that she disappeared halfway through the podcast. So she literally disappears and we don't notice it. Therefore, we don't acknowledge it. And it kind of looks like Amanda and I like dominate the conversation and just forget about Rachel and don't let her speak. That is absolutely not the case. I ended up having to edit out portions where it looked like Amanda and I were just sitting there silent, laughing at nothing because we could see Rachel, but she was not being recorded. And therefore, there are large audio gaps where Rachel would have been speaking. So you will see our friend being her charming, loving self at the beginning of the podcast. And then all of a sudden, she will be gone. This wasn't magic. This wasn't on purpose. This was technical difficulties. And I just wanted to give you guys a heads up because it looks really weird. All right. So we had a great conversation. We had a really good time. And we have Amanda Peterson on as a guest again today to talk about everything foreign policy, which, you know, with the meeting that Trump will be having with Putin tomorrow, it's definitely a interesting and relevant topic. So let's go ahead and get into the episode. And Rachel is with us. You just can't see her. Okay. Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense. Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Oh, I was like, oh, gosh, did we just lose you? Yeah, no, you're there. Okay. We had some technical difficulties last episode, so we'll see. So fingers crossed. But in addition, of course, we have our friend of the podcast, Amanda Peterson, here. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Okay, so since Amanda's here, and if you guys have been following us for a while, you know why she's here, because it's because we're going to be talking about some foreign policy. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. And today, we're focusing mostly, but not only, on the main event, on the big show that is, I don't know if it's going to be a big show. I don't know if it's going to be a dud, but tomorrow, Trump is meeting with Putin in Alaska, which there was a lot of speculation to where this meeting was going to happen. And the fact that it's happening on U.S. territory, but also U.S. territory that used to be Russian territory, I think the optics of that is very interesting. I would first kind of to set the stage of what is going to happen tomorrow. What is this? Have we seen the U.S. do this type of meeting before with Putin on U.S. soil? Because I remember during the Obama administration, they tried to, you know, they did the whole, what was that button, Rachel? Do you remember that button? The restart button?
Yes.
With Hillary Clinton?
It's not the first time a U.S. president has met with a like foreign dignitary or head of state in Alaska. Reagan did it with Pope John Paul II, and Nixon did it with, I think, the Japanese prime minister. It's Japanese prime minister, not president.
Yeah,
right?
Not prime minister. It was the, what is it called?
Emperor. Okay. Yeah. So it's not uncommon for them to meet in Alaska. It's just uncommon to meet with Putin and anywhere else but Russia.
Have we had a president meet with Putin before? I don't think so, right?
Yeah. I mean, the last time Putin has been to a Western country, Western, was when he went to Japan for the G20 in 2019. Mm-hmm. But he was obviously kicked out of the G20. Now it's kind of like anytime we've met with Putin before, it's been in neutral territory. So there were talks that we would like that Trump would meet him in Dubai or, you know, somewhere else. Putin has been indicted for war crimes by the ICC there's an arrest warrant out for him since 2022. So he can't go to a lot of countries because then he would be arrested. So he's been outside of Russia, but he'll go to like Kazakhstan. We don't recognize the ICC. We shouldn't. No country should, in my opinion. But so that's the International Criminal Court. And so he won't be arrested here. And I'm kind of surprised how few pundits have not said, like, we should arrest him and drone strike him or whatever. So I don't know. I mean, I thought that there would be a lot more chaos around this. And it just seems like everyone's kind of confused.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I don't know if that has to do a little bit with what is the expectation of this meeting, because, you know, Trump announced the meeting that they were going to meet. And then, you know, things start to leak. So there's talk of having, you know, letting the lines stay where they are. And so Russia keeps Crimea and the Donbass region, Ukraine. I don't know, like there's a give and take here. But at the same time, shortly after that, Zelensky kind of undermined that and said, we're not going to give any land or anything whatsoever. But then also at the same time, but yeah, we want peace. And also, I feel like Trump, I don't know if he's lowering expectations or what is going on or what he expects of this meeting, because I feel like the way that he has been talking about it has been, I don't know, like a little subdued. Like he's not. And I don't know if that's because he's not sure he's going to get anything out of Putin. And so he's kind of lowering the expectations, or if he just doesn't want to overpromise.
I don't know where he said this, but I guess the other day he was like, I'll know within 2 minutes sitting down with him if he means business.
He did it during the presser with, I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, I remember him saying that it was during a presser.
It's like, well, I think it's a 3-hour meeting. So the first 2 minutes.
Like, he like, said today that he is 75% sure that there will be a favorable outcome. I was like, okay, so he's getting specific. We're at 75%. He likes to throw out those numbers. Like when he was doing the Kennedy Center honors presser, they asked, how much input did you have into this? He was like, 98%, 99%. So he's big into percentages. I actually think that they're not, and when I say they, I mean collectively, like the country, but even a lot of pundits and news, like political commentators, aren't focusing too much on this, which, I mean, they should, but because this is my opinion, I think people have like focus fatigue because with this administration, everything is so consequential, fast moving, important, and has like real life consequences for like the whole country. People have whiplash. They don't know where to look. They don't know where to steady their gaze and what things are. I just think they're so scatterbrained. Like there's so much happening, you know, and when there is so much happening, it's hard to focus on the meaty issues at hand because everything feels important.
Not only that, but I also think it's, sorry, I also think it's like after Trump's Iran strikes and everybody freaked out about that. And oh, my God, it's going to be World War III and China and Russia are going to come in. And yeah. None of that happened. It was pretty successful. I just think that the impact of Biden's Afghanistan withdrawal and how embarrassing that was for us really stuck with us as a nation. Mm-hmm. And now that we've kind of recovered from that and we're like, oh, yeah, we can do like quick, decisive action and it won't lead to World War III. I mean, Trump just repositioned nuclear submarines because of Russian foreign minister's tweets 2 weeks ago, and nobody cares. Nobody's talking about it. Like, people just aren't worried about this going crazy or going nuclear, I think, because we're just, our latest memory of a Trump foreign policy decision is like a pretty good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of nuclear, there has been, you know, there's a lot of conversations happening on like what is going to come out of this meeting. Like, what is everybody's goal? What is Trump? Now, we know Trump wants, honestly, what he would want is just an agreement of we're going to stop fighting, ceasefire, and let's make some diplomatic peace terms. But I don't know if that is necessarily Putin's intent. I don't know. Zelensky's not going to be at the meeting. I believe the speculation is that there could possibly be a second meeting where Zelensky would be. But I don't think anybody's really open to like everybody being there at the table to have a meeting, meaning Trump, Putin, and Zelensky, plus all of their, I don't know, counterparts. Like, what have you been listening to conversations about this meeting, and what are people speculating could be some of the possible outcomes of this meeting between Trump and Putin?
I mean, I've just seen the classic, either Trump's going to get fooled by Putin and he might give away more territory than Russia's won, which I just don't see as a possibility. I think what people who say that need to realize is that Trump's entire first term was brought down by the Russian collusion thing. And I do think that that sticks with him. Just it's like ego-wise. He's not going to give Ukraine to Putin and confirm those suspicions.
That he's doing him a favor. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't, like, he's mad at Putin for, like, playing into that. And so I think that there's that here. I think that there's other people who are just saying that Putin's going to try and drag this out and make Zelensky look like he's the holdout. And Zelensky's statements coming out don't help that perception. But that's, like, to me, that feels like the theater of this and the pundit conversation, which I think is very different than the way the administration is looking at this. I don't know. So, I mean,
I'm just curious, like, I'm trying to think at the end, because tomorrow it's supposed to be Putin and Trump first, mm-hmm. our meeting. And then after that, they're meeting with their delegates and their counterparts. Like, the whole team is supposed to be having a meeting. I also know that this is going to be heavily covered. They have press that's coming along. There has been talk that Trump is going to hold a press conference afterwards, but there's nothing about whether they just say a press conference. They don't say anything about like Putin and I are going to be holding a press conference and taking questions. So my guess is
Can you imagine? I'm sorry. I have been so bored with politics before this second Trump term, and the things that we're actually saying and the things that have actually happened in just 7 months. I mean, the guy has brokered, what is it now, 5 peace deals? I think 6 or 7 heads of state are calling for him to be the Nobel Peace Prize winner. Like, I saw today, there's a bunch of, like, huge trucks carting away all the homeless encampments, like tents. We're cleaning up the Smithsonian. We're cleaning up D.C. We have no illegal immigrants coming into the country. And he might do a press conference with Putin tomorrow. It's just crazy to me. After 4 years of not even knowing where the president was, the fact that Mercedes, you were like, I don't remember when he said it. It was in one of the last pressers.
Some press conference that he did in the last 48.
And Biden gave like a quarter, maybe, and probably not even that. So I don't know. I had to take a moment for us all to recognize that this is the busiest administration of all time.
Well, and since, let me think, since Putin invaded Ukraine, this most recent invasion, nobody has met with him. Am I wrong to say that? Like, Biden never met with him. Mm-mm. There's never been any
talk with him.
Which is weird. Mm-hmm. Weird for the U.S.-Russia relationship. Mm-hmm. Because this is one of the things that the more realist types kind of talk about a lot, that we're really headed into a weird direction. And this is what really scares me about China, too. All throughout the Cold War, but even after the Cold War, we had red lines that we knew we would not cross and that the Russians knew not to cross when we were dealing with things geopolitically. I think one of the Condoleezza Rice just brought this up on something I was listening to her on. She was saying, like, after 9/11, Putin specifically drove his troops back to kind of let us go into Afghanistan and kind of just, he really decreased his presence out of respect for us and to show, like, hey, we're not helping the Taliban. You know, we're not anywhere near this. Whereas when that thing happened with China, where we were a Chinese fighter jet, like, kind of, what was that in 2001? Like, kind of grounded. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah. Or clipped the wing of another jet or something like that.
We couldn't get a hold of the Chinese for 3 days. And so after Russia invaded Ukraine, and it was like, Russia's terrible, Russia's bad, we're never going to talk to him, he's too evil to talk to. I agree. Like, I agree that Putin is evil and, like, you know, like all of those things. But it's weird that we just threw that relationship and kind of status quo out the window. Mm-hmm. And it could have made for dangerous scenarios.
Yeah.
And it's good to, like, to me, it's comforting to see that that's happening again with Trump, even though people are going to say that Trump is, like, evil and crazy for doing that. I don't know. John Bolton was saying this is terrible because it's showing that we're treating Putin as an equal. It's like, No, it doesn't.
I don't understand that mentality. I just think it's, like, weird to be, and there's been a lot of conversation about that. It's like the leaders are feeling each other out. They're going to be in the same room. They're going to have a conversation. They're going to feel each other out. And I think, you know, it's important, you know, it's different too, I should say, because Trump has put the United States in a very different position versus the position that Russia is currently in. And the lack of leverage that we had within the previous administration, because there was no willingness to even change what we were doing. Like, all we were doing was printing money and sending money and arms to Ukraine, but we weren't really doing anything directly that was negatively, I mean, there were some sanctions and stuff, but that was, like, directly and negatively affecting Russia. Versus, I mean, am I missing anything that happened during the previous 4 years on that?
The only thing I would, like, add to that is, yes, we were giving them millions of dollars worth of weapons, but we were never giving them what they were asking for. So we would give them just enough to keep territory and not lose a whole lot, but we never gave them enough to win. We always heavily restricted what they did with it. So basically, we were spending U.S. taxpayer dollars to
keep a war going,
have Ukraine maintain its position.
So not to interrupt you, but it says right here, it says Trump is prepping for high stakes meeting. And then it says Zelensky calls for more sanctions before Trump-Putin talks. So
Trump won't like that. He does not like being told what to do. Do not do that. Why are these people like this? Why do they not learn lessons?
I don't understand why Zelensky hasn't learned from that. It's pretty easy to deal with Trump. All of the Western European leaders have figured it out.
Yes.
Pakistan figured it out. I mean, Armenia and Azerbaijan, I mean, it's pretty, Bibi knows, like, a lot of leaders know how to deal with Trump. I don't understand why Zelensky doesn't have to. But with the weapons thing, so we never gave them enough. The other thing, though, is with these sanctions, a lot of what we're doing right now is there were these existing sanctions in place, but we weren't always enforcing them. So Russia was running a bunch of bank accounts in the, United Arab Emirates. And just in the past 2 weeks, the United States has started clamping down and making UAE close those bank accounts. So in my opinion, Biden was trying to show, oh, look how much we care about Ukraine. We're spending all this money for them to defend democracy, blah, blah, blah. Oh, look, we're going to do the sanctions. I don't think sanctions work, but, you know, that's a me thing. But, like, he didn't even enforce the sanctions. Mm-hmm. Now, not only is Trump doubling down on sanctions with, like, India, which is, we can get into, that's a little weird, but, like, we could have, like, it's incredible to me that people talk about Biden as if, like, Biden was the only one who was really defending Ukraine and he cares so deeply. And it's like, actually, no, the opposite.
It was a performative, honestly, if you really think about it, it was kind of a performative defense of Ukraine. It was just enough, especially considering that, you know, his poll numbers were down. That was a big issue with Democrats. He needed their support. So he needed to appear not to be anything like Trump. And so he had to give as much support as possible. That was just enough to make it look like he was supportive of Ukraine, especially for his base or for his supporters. But I mean, it's clear to me, especially if we look at any way Ukraine was dealt with previously, like when he was vice president, because he was the one that was supposed to be in charge of Ukraine while the time that he was vice president. You know, it wasn't exactly, I wouldn't say that he had the best relationship with Ukraine and Zelensky, or not Zelensky, because it wasn't Zelensky at the time, but with Ukraine in that moment. And there are reports that while he was president, there was a lot of confrontations, or there were a few confrontations between Biden and Zelensky over the phone. And I think it's because Zelensky, you know, to not to defend Biden, but Zelensky isn't exactly a reasonable person.
No.
when it comes to negotiations for Ukraine. But in that realm, because you brought up India, and I suspect, I'm not 100% sure if I'm correct in this, but Putin's in a very different position coming into this meeting versus where he was, I don't know, at the beginning of the conflict, or even halfway through the conflict. Since Trump has come into office, you know, he wants peace. He has now issued, I think, a 25% tariff on India, because directly claiming it's because India purchases their oil from Russia. Mm-hmm. I think also, you know, his recent peace negotiation between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Is that how, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Azerbaijan.
I think also partially undermines Putin. And so I'm just wondering, like, how, because a lot of people are like, you're not giving any kind of conditions before you're coming to meet with Putin. Just like Zelensky is now demanding more sanctions before they meet. But they're not really taking into account all these other things that Trump has been doing. And I think that should be taken into account before he goes into the meeting. And maybe it puts Putin, I don't know, in a more vulnerable position. Is that an unfair conclusion?
I think I agree with you that, yeah, I mean, Putin, when Putin looked like he was going to invade Ukraine in 2022, Biden going to him and saying, this is going to be the sanctions package that we use against you if you invade Ukraine, was like maybe the dumbest thing that any president.
It's kind of like, here,
done.
Get ready, because this is what we're going to do to you, and you can fortify in other ways before we issue these sanctions.
Oh, here's how to finance your war. And by the way, there will be no American military action. None. And I think that that's also because we thought that Ukraine would fall in 5 days. I think before Ukraine held out, and by the way, they could not have held out had they not had the Javelin anti-tank missiles that Trump provided the Ukrainians with. Again, the most pro-Russia president ever armed the Ukrainians with lethal aid when Barack Obama only gave them MREs and blankets. But okay.
For context, that's why, if anybody doesn't know, that's why Trump will often say them, says Javelins. I gave them missiles while Obama gave them blankets or something like that. That's what he's referring to.
Yeah. I can't believe how wrong people get. It actually makes me feel like I'm going crazy. But that's like a lot of the way that people cover Trump. Same with, like, I mean, a lot of things, January 6th, anything. But like when it comes to specifically Russia, Ukraine, sure, he does not talk as tough on Putin as Kamala Harris did. Does anybody think Kamala Harris could handle meeting him in Anchorage? Anybody?
I'm sorry.
Does anybody believe that that's a good idea? No.
Well, and I think actually, kind of to go on a side tangent, but I think that's one of the struggles that the Democrats have right now, just in general, is their image. You know, like, I can't think of any Democrat leader right now that is trying to fill the void of their leadership that I'm like, yeah, I really see them negotiating from a position of strength with Putin or Xi or anything like that. Like, I saw one of the wildest exchanges on CNN, which is often, I say wildest as if like I'm almost overusing that because it's like everything is wild. But it was Scott Jennings, and he had brought up the fact that Trump has made multiple peace deals. And some woman on the panel, she had this like bright turquoise suit on. She was black, blonde, had her hair dyed blonde. I don't know who she is, but she was like, she's like, there hasn't been any deals. There hasn't been really any peace deals. And he was really taken aback as like, have I been hallucinating? We literally saw the leaders of these countries, most recently, Armenia and Azerbaijan, like meet at the White House, shake hands, sign documents. And it's kind of what's been happening too with these tariff deals, which I think it's a much more fair criticism with the tariff deals versus these peace deals. But it's kind of this idea of like, yeah, he did it, you know, for show, as if these leaders is kind of, this is kind of what they're trying to convey. These leaders are performing for Trump, but they're not really agreeing to any kind of peace. Ultimately, it's probably going to end up falling apart, but they're, this is like an exchange of, you know, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. We'll do each other some favors. I'll put on the show for you. It'll make you look good. You'll eventually do us a favor, and then we'll go on our merry way, and we'll end up, I don't know, blowing each other up in 6 months. Like, that is kind of the, when I do hear an opposing narrative, specifically when it comes to these peace deals, that's kind of where it seems to be, like, because obviously they can't say the event didn't happen. It happened. We all saw it. Now, the assumption is that because it's Trump, it's either performative, there's no teeth in it, and it'll eventually fall apart and he won't care about it. But in the moment, it gave him the headline that he wanted.
I think Democrats have gotten themselves all worked up on like the Woodrow Wilson diplomacy, and we're the ones who care about diplomacy.
Woodrow Wilson
and
was horrible.
In order to do diplomacy well, you have to be so nice, and you have to just give everything to them, and they'll just love America. And then you have Trump, who is putting, you know, tariffs on everybody, getting good deals. And it's like, oh, well, I guess there's another way to do diplomacy. You know, like the way that they've characterized Trump for 10 years is that he's so bombastic, he might go nuke Russia out of the blue and nobody will even know. Will, like, there were think pieces in the first term of like, will the person carrying the football deny the call if told to, you know, and it's like, okay. And now he's the one brokering all of these deals. And it's like, I think that they don't, it's the whiplash. They don't even know where to go with that. Because how can you say, I don't know, how can you say that Biden was so amazing on diplomacy and all of these things, yet, I don't.
Yeah, they've.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I mean, we've seen things get progressively worse. So in regards to kind of wrap up the meeting that's going to happen tomorrow, what do we know what time they're meeting? Like Eastern time? 3:30? Okay. So 3:30 Eastern is when they're supposed to be meeting. And I'm just like, do we have any speculation of what could possibly come out at the end of the meeting? Because it could be a 5-hour meeting. It could be a 15-minute meeting.
I really have no idea what to expect. Like my, I don't know, my gut tells me if they're meeting here, not in a neutral place, I think that more than likely something pretty big comes of this. I just don't know what it is. And like, I think Putin is in a tough position right now.
This is a statement that's coming up. Trump on peace talk with Russia. This meeting sets up the second meeting. The second meeting is going to be very, very important because that's going to be a meeting where they make a deal, and I don't want to use the word to divvy things up, but, you know, divvy things up. And then this was on with Brian Kilmeade this morning on his talk show. And then he goes on, he says, but, you know, to a certain extent, it is not a bad term, okay? But there will be a give and take as to boundaries, lands, et cetera, et cetera. The second meeting is going to be very, very important. So apparently this is just a sniffing each other out meeting before there is going to be a second meeting. And I guess he's trying to, it says this meeting sets up. It's like chess game. This meeting sets up the second meeting. I don't have the cadence. I didn't have the role that, you know, obviously you can very much hear Trump in that statement. So it's looking like this isn't going to be a moment of feeling each other out before they have a second meeting to try and, he doesn't want to say divvy things up, but divvy things up. Do you think there's any possibility whatsoever that Zelensky will sit in a room with Putin?
I don't think he's allowed to, per his constitution.
Oh, really?
I might be getting that wrong. That might be a thing, though. I don't know. Every time Zelensky can't do something, he's like, well, my constitution. It's like, you're under martial law. I think you can, I don't know. I mean, maybe I do sound like an authoritarian fascist telling him to, like, throw out his constitution, but I don't know, dude. Like, I don't know.
I'm looking here because apparently Putin also made some statements where he's basically lauding the president for, he says, the current American administration, which has, as everyone knows, is making, in my opinion, quite energetic and sincere efforts to stop the hostilities in order to create long-term conditions of peace between our countries and in Europe and in the world as a whole. If we reach agreements in the area of control over strategic offensive weapons on the next stage. So he is also fully expecting there to be a second meeting. I wonder if they'll be coming back to Alaska. I'm very curious. This is all like new ways of doing foreign policy, specifically the way that Trump has been using tariffs and these deals in order to push foreign policy. Speaking of, I saw you talk recently about these trade deals and how, I don't know who it was, but it was maybe the Washington Post ended up reporting, like they realized that there's, what was it that they, that the Washington Post discovered?
So the Washington Post did this big expose. Oh my gosh. They have exclusive reporting that actually there's more in the trade deal, tariff deal discussions than just trade deficits. Whoa. You're telling me now for the first time. Trump's advisors have been saying this for 4 years. 4 years they've been saying this. I knew all of this. When all of the tariff thing came out, I was like, honestly, people, just calm down. He's doing all, I don't know. Nobody's ever done trade deals like he did before. The thought was always, okay, if we want any type of burden sharing with our allies, we need to give them complete access to our markets, allow them to not give us any access if they don't want to theirs, for instance, in the case of Japan, and then just like hope and pray that they buy American military tech and actually we can't talk to them at all about like countering China. Well, I guess it came out like because people were confused about why Trump was putting tariffs on Israel. Mm-hmm. When Israel didn't really have any on us besides dairy. And Bibi did a press conference. We're going to get rid of all of the tariffs. And then people were just like, I don't understand. Like, people were basically just saying that he's crazy or stupid because Israel doesn't have them or whatever. And isn't he Israel first? Maybe not. I don't know. Well, it turns out that a Chinese company owns part of the port of Haifa. And so part of the tariff deal was that he wants them to force that Chinese company to divest from the port of Haifa. And one of the reasons for that is because we give the Israelis and sell them a lot of weapons tech, and we don't want Chinese companies digging around in the port of Haifa to see what we're selling them, maybe. That's what I would guess. I don't know. But there's things like that going on. A lot of that was folded into the tariff deals. Nobody's done something like that before. But like with Indonesia, we're making them buy more U.S. military equipment. And when they buy that, then we're going to say, hey, by the way, you've got to help us with countering China. With India, that's part of it too. We want them to buy American military equipment. And for some reason, they don't want to. They buy most of theirs from Russia and France. In that latest spat between them and Pakistan, Indian planes got shot down by Pakistani ones. So we want India to kind of be a true counterweight to China should the time arise. And I think it's a lot closer than people are willing to say. I also don't think it'll start over Taiwan. I think it could start in the Philippines, and we can talk about that. But like, India needs to get their shit together. They can't, sorry, like they can't play neutral. Like they can't.
Oh, so, okay. So you're talking, that makes me think about, because you're talking about China, you're talking about technology, you're talking about we're using tariffs as, you know, a tool for, you know, foreign policy. Oh, I was like, is that, that was in 2018. They just showed a clip of Trump and Putin together. And I'm like, wait a minute. What day is it? Okay.
Oh, can you imagine?
Like, oh my gosh. Okay. Their heads will explode.
Can I also just point out really quick, the fact that it's happening in Alaska, I think this is lost on people. Putin won't fly over European countries. So he's going to fly over Russia to Alaska. Like, think about, like,
I think it's weird. When they announced that it was going to be Alaska, I was really surprised. I was like, you're coming to our home turf, also a territory that used to be yours. Like, I just feel like the optics of it, and I don't know, maybe the optics of it, like, I see them in a different way that maybe like the regular Joe will, because most people don't even think that way. You know what I mean? But I know other foreign countries do, especially other foreign leaders. So I think it kind of matters. But to come back to what you were saying earlier in regards to, like, you know, all of these tariffs and trying to move against China, like, then what's going on with NVIDIA?
Oh,
like,
well,
doesn't that kind of undermine that? And just to set it up for everyone real quick, NVIDIA is a US-based chip company. And so they have different generations of chips, let's say. And currently, we have made an agreement to sell old AI chips, like the H2O, to China, not our newest stuff. And then in addition to that, the U.S. government has entered into an agreement with NVIDIA, which this isn't, I mean, we can talk about this in a minute, but like getting 15% of their profit, of their revenue, like revenue share with a private company, which I think is like super weird.
Really weird.
Okay. Yeah. I'm like, do we all think that's weird? I think that's weird. But before we go into profit sharing with the government, which I think is super weird, what, like, isn't this kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth, of like saying that you want to move against China and technology, but then also we're selling them, I mean, granted, they're old chips, but chips?
I think that we are in a really weird position, and so is NVIDIA in this. So the history of this is in 2018, Trump was really, really hawkish on China in his first term, and he's weirdly softened. I mean, some people say he's softened a bit. I don't know. I mean, we had like 200% tariffs on them like 2 months ago, but like, Trump was, I think, the first president ever to take a call from the president of Taiwan before he took office. Like, he was very hawkish. And one of the things he did was put in place export controls on computer chips. The background or thought process on that is that China's a peer competitor when it comes to like the race for technology right now between us. They actually do better than us in some regards, and then we're better than them on some regards. One of those is chips. Like chips manufacturing and things. And so if we don't want to create our biggest competitor, which we already kind of have in terms of the economy, yeah, we should not allow them to import a bunch of these computer chips. So in 2018, we did export controls on them. Then Biden expanded those export controls in 2022. And NVIDIA made these H2O chips specifically in accordance with that 2022 expansion of the export controls. So these H2O chips were only created to give to China to like be in compliance with American stuff.
Okay.
It's also, it's not only an older American generation like, we have newer chips, but this is like a less good version of our old chips, these H20s or H2Os. Okay. So anybody saying that this is like an advanced chip, it's not. It's like, I don't want to use numbers capacity, but it's not even as good as our older generation chips. They completely made this for China. And so it's kind of a weird position we put NVIDIA in where it's like, hey, develop this chip and we'll let you sell that one. Oh, just kidding. Never mind.
I see.
Yeah. So it's like this weird position we put them in. NVIDIA makes about $15 billion a year from exporting these chips to China. And then we just completely turn that valve off and say, oh, never mind. $15 billion is not a ton in terms of, I think, NVIDIA's yearly revenue. Again, I don't know the number off the top of my head, so I don't want to speculate. It's a lot more than $15 billion. But I don't like profit sharing with, you know, an American company with the U.S. government. I also don't like the U.S. government telling an American company, oh, you can't make $15 billion this year after we forced you to change the chips that you make. So it's like they're in a weird position. Also, NVIDIA's being not sued by, but they're like being investigated by the Chinese ever since July of this year for like, it's called like backdoor, where basically they're saying that the chips that they're importing from NVIDIA might have a kill switch on them or like be able to investigate Chinese technology. So they're like investigating NVIDIA saying, oh, you might be spying on us, kind of something. I'm really simplifying this.
Yeah.
Last things I will say about these H2O chips is that as soon as we clamp down on them for export controls, all of the sudden, these shell companies that pop up in Kazakhstan and Singapore and wherever else start importing a bunch of these H2O chips, and then China gets them anyways. And so we believe that they're then just sending them into China. Again, one of the reasons that these tariff deals, we were trying to clamp down on getting them to help us with export controls. But I think that there's an ethos in the Trump administration now where it's like, look, if they're going to get these chips anyways, why not allow an
American company profit?
Yeah, well, let's get something out of it. You know, yeah. let's try and work with them on this or that. There's also, I think, an idea that if you get them hooked on American chips, if we need to withhold those at a different time, that might be beneficial to us. Like, they have a company, it's called like Huawei, or am I saying this?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know which one. It's Huawei.
Yeah. Huawei or whatever. And they make chips that are almost as good as the H2Os, but not quite as good. And so if we just give them the H2Os, they're going to stop developing their own tech stack, build all of their stuff on top of ours. And then should it ever come to a time where we need to really limit their military capacity, for instance, we can just stop selling them the chips. This gets really confusing, and I don't even know if I'm explaining it that well, but you have pundits who are either Trump is the best president on China in 20 years, and this is just completely fine, or you have pundits being like, you know, this is Trump giving up the AI race to China. And in reality, the actual experts that I listen to are way more mixed on this. And like, well, there could be a benefit here, and there's this.
Well, and that's what I've seen too.
Yeah. Like, and I'm kind of more in the idea or in the middle where it's like, I don't know. I mean, if this comes out to have been a stupid move, that's going to be like kind of maybe one of the biggest blunders of the 21st century. And that's not being hyperbolic. But at the same time, like, this is a complicated issue. I don't know. We don't have enough leverage to just completely ice China out of the entire world. Maybe it's better to get them hooked on our stack. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, NVIDIA's CEO actually recently did an interview and he was talking about that. He was like, you know, we are also very pro-America. We want to help the United States. And what our goal is to make other countries more dependent on American tech stacks versus going and looking towards China to do that. I had no idea, which makes a lot more sense, especially when it comes to the H2O chip, that chip was created basically because of all the regulations that were put on them or the requirements that were put on them by the previous administration. And then to just tell them, you made all this investment, which is probably dependent on jobs too, that would negatively affect the U.S. the U.S. economy in some way, or it just wouldn't be good to just limit that sale, which was what it was designed to do in the first place, to China. What I don't get is the revenue sharing with the...
If you look at it from that perspective, though, of we're just turning off a valve of $15 billion and NVIDIA would really like to make that $15 billion, kind of makes sense if they say, hey, we'll just give the government a cut of this $15 billion. It makes me think that NVIDIA used it as a bargaining chip. Like, we'll give you access to some of this if you let us make the money.
I don't know. It makes me feel icky.
Yeah.
It was like a bargaining chip, like, let us sell these chips and we'll give you 15% of our revenue. And that feels a little weird, too, that a company can go into the government and bargain, or I don't want to say bribe or anything like that, because I don't think it's to that extent. But, like, I don't know. It just does not feel it doesn't feel very capitalist. I don't know. It just doesn't feel correct.
There is something to be said, too, about, like, if this happens where the AI accelerationists are right and AI just explodes over the next, like, I don't know what the market cap of NVIDIA is. It's huge. It's trillions and trillions of dollars. If that quadruples over the next 2 years, which some people say it would or could in the next 2 to 5 years, it'll just be that much bigger. I mean, that 15% revenue share could pay off the deficit almost. That's how big, not pay it off because it's trillions of dollars.
I mean, in addition to all the revenue that we're bringing in with the tariffs and stuff, it's, you know, it could be, it's very significant. You can't say that it's, you know, not going to, like, you can make the argument, which is why it's also one of those that it is America first. It's a benefit to the Americans because it pays down the deficit. And so you become a little bit more open to it. But, you know, again, the concern remains if you create this, what's the word I'm looking for? This precedent.
Yeah.
Where the government can either be convinced to do a company a favor or allow them to do something if they get a revenue share in it, or, you know, that the government can choose who they want to go into business with. Like, it just doesn't, I just see a lot of potential in the future conflicts of interest. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody brings this up in court and it gets challenged in some way. Like, this may not even be legal, honestly.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Well, not only that, but it's kind of also showing, like, the growing closeness of American tech bros, the tech right, and Peter Thiel's and Palantir and the government. And I mean, I don't, if the AI accelerationists are right and we're going to see a massive difference in the next 5 years with, like, government and tech being close, this will just be kind of interesting to watch. And I think it could be a vulnerability on the political side for Republicans, making it look like they're controlled by the tech guys. I've felt personally, I don't know if I'm just crazy, but I've thought it's really weird that all of the tech guys are going on podcasts all of a sudden. Why are you trying to get this image of yourself out there? Why is Mark Zuckerberg talking to Theo Von, or did he go on the All In? I don't know. Why is the Sam Altman going on Theo Von? What is this getting for you? Why do you want people to think that you're normal? Why are you trying to get this thing out about you? Like, that's what I think, though. And they're all just talking about, oh, I just love being a father. And it's like, great. What's going on? Why are you doing this? Why are you being this forward facing? But I think it's because in the next, honestly, 5 years or maybe even less, these AI companies are going to explode. And if we have this issue like we do right now, where you have, like, people with money and people without money, and it really feels like the divide's growing, you don't want all of the people without money to start getting violent towards the people with it. And so they're trying to, oh, I'm benevolent, I'm nice. And
yeah, for sure.
Probably more of a gray area.
Well, I don't know exactly. I get a little skeeved out, too, about the closeness between the government and the tech bros. And also at the same time, like, I don't necessarily fault it because think about, I don't know, the race for the atom bomb and stuff and the closeness between the government and academics at the time. Like, it's kind of one of these things that closeness is a little bit, I don't know, almost like required in order to advance the technology for the benefit of the United States. But also at the same time, you know, academics were broke academics. Right now we got tech billionaires that have money to, you know, get in cozy influence. And I really, really do not want the Republican Party to fall back into that mindset of, you know, doing of the cronyism of doing favors for companies and big tech, or how the Democrats, for example, you know, lost the working man or whatever because they were canoodling with George Clooney.
Just, yeah.
Like, yep. I'm not a huge fan of it. But you mentioned something earlier about the Philippines and your concern about the Philippines, which you mentioned that and I went like this because I have literally heard nothing and I don't know what you're talking about. And so I am intrigued.
This is why I'm so concerned about it, is I feel like nobody thinks about it or talks about it. But earlier this week, the U.S. has a longstanding relationship with the Philippines. We actually owned it for a time after we won the Spanish-American War. We had bases on there, and we were kind of abruptly kicked out in, like, 1992. Well, we went back in 2014 when the Chinese started getting kind of sketchy with access to what they call the South China Sea, and we are now calling the Western Filipino Sea. Basically, China decided
that memo.
China decided that they actually get access to all of the water, all of these waters, and the areas that Filipino fishing ships would kind of float around in and fish in for hundreds of years. Actually, that belongs to China now. So they'll have their Coast Guard kind of running around, and they basically run down these Filipino ships.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a really big deal over there. And this is one of the reasons a lot of these countries in the Pacific are kind of wanting to deepen their relationship with us, is because we have a navy that could stop the Chinese. But the way they do this, it's called the gray zone. It's called like gray zone tactics, where it's not quite an act of war to just have a Chinese naval ship or Chinese Coast Guard ship, like, you know, running down.
Wasn't there a video that went around recently of some Chinese ship going into a boat or something?
That's what, yeah. So this is what I'm, yeah. So.
Oh, okay. I saw it. I had no idea what it was.
I made a video about this. So they'll kind of chase these ships around, but it's not quite an act of war because China says it's their area, but they've never really taken it back by force. The Philippines says, no, it's ours. And so it's just kind of this fight, but it's not quite a war. Well, we're a treaty ally of the Philippines, and the Filipino, like, prime minister and stuff has said that what would cross this from just gray zone to an act of war is if Filipinos are killed by Chinese Coast Guard, like, you know, running them down. Or
fair. That's fair.
Fair, right? Well, earlier this week, a Chinese naval ship crashed into a Chinese Coast Guard ship trying to chase down one of these Filipino boats. And Chinese, it's likely that some members of the Chinese Coast Guard died from this, because after the crash happened, they were kind of surveilling the area for days. So we're already seeing deaths happening. Thank God it's not Filipino deaths. But this could be a point. I mean, we talk about Taiwan all the time. I'm extremely worried about Taiwan. This could be the first point of contention with China, where all of a sudden the Philippines declares war on China because the Chinese just killed Filipino fishermen for really no reason. There's no reason that they should be doing this. And then that's a treaty ally of the United States. So people should focus, like, watch this field a little bit.
I mean, I saw the video, but I had literally no clue what it had to do with anything or what the issue was.
I'm really worried about this. I'm worried that in 6 months we're going to be at war with China over the Philippines, and people are going to be like, what? It's going to be like Russia, Ukraine again. Nobody understands.
Nobody had any clue that it was happening or anything like that. Yeah, I had absolutely no idea that it was that. Like I mentioned, I had seen the video, but I had no idea that this was like a thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So before we wrap, I want to ask you real quick on Israel, and we'll keep this short, because Israel has made plans to occupy Gaza, right? Like, they've already made agreements that they're going to occupy Gaza. So are they going to occupy Gaza, and what's going to happen there? Like, are we going to end up with a peace deal? Does it undermine? There's other, these other countries too that are wanting to recognize a Palestinian state. Like, what's happening there?
The other countries recognizing a Palestinian state makes Hamas less likely to make a peace deal.
Which is what I would have assumed.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you to Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron. If you want to have a country in sovereignty in their eyes, don't make semiconductors like Taiwan. That doesn't matter. Start wars you can't win. It's infuriating. But I don't, the term occupation gets so charged with Israel-Palestine, because I think in our American minds, we think about occupation as like the worst thing that could ever happen. And oh my God, like we have to stop an occupation at all costs. And I don't, this is what happens in wars. You know, you go through and you take territory. And then instead of having the Gaza Ministry of Health run by Hamas still active, it becomes the, you know, health ministry that reports to the Israelis. And we're already seeing in like Rafah, which they're starting to do counter-extremism classes where, I mean, we have to think like these kids in Gaza have not been in school in almost 2 years. And so Rafah right now, I guess there's not really any fighting, or this must be in Al-Muasi, which is near Rafah. It's like the humanitarian corridor. They're putting the kids in school and they're saying, hey, you should love everybody. I don't think that they're explicitly saying Jews, but you know,
yeah, as opposed to what they had before, which is
right.
Which, what was it? The UNRWA, or who was it? It was a humanitarian, or, I'm sorry, United Nations organization that was doing classes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the teachers were Hamas leadership who were telling the kids to like hate Jews.
Yeah. Well, if you ever want to look up really crazy, look up Gaza cartoons about like, yeah, like they, it's like 6-year-olds like, I want to kill the Yehud, which is Jews. So it's like really crazy.
I saw something about like that there's still, and I don't even know, I didn't necessarily understand this, because there was something about some counterparts having a meeting, like delegates between Israel and I'm guessing Hamas. I don't know who else they were meeting with, someone representing the Palestinians, to try and broker some kind of ceasefire or peace deal. But then also at the same time, I'm hearing that they've already approved the occupation of Gaza. Like, would one take out the other?
No, I mean, okay. And this is kind of the, nobody is good enough for the Israelis to come in and take over other than like maybe the Saudis in the Gaza Strip. So that's probably part of it too. Right now, Gaza is run by Hamas. The Palestinian Authority claims it runs the West Bank, and really they kind of only run Ramallah. It's kind of a functioning government, although they don't, they haven't elected a new president in 20 years and he has a 4-year term and it's super corrupt and the Palestinians don't feel like it really represents them, but they're like, they work with Israel on counterterrorism stuff. They also have the Martyrs Fund, where if a Palestinian gets arrested for killing Israelis, their family gets a payment while they're in jail for, you know,
yeah,
Martyrs Fund. So it's really, or if they die, they get even more. So it's like kind of this weird, it's not a great partner, but it's better than Hamas. But occupation, I mean, this is what happens with war.
Yeah, it's happening. Basically, yeah, occupation is going to happen and it doesn't really matter. So
maybe it'll be like a joint Israel security presence, but then the PA eventually comes in. This has been going on for 2 years, where the Israelis say, we'd prefer it to be like UAE and Saudi coming in. And UAE and Saudi, or really just UAE, says, we'll come in, but we want to be invited by the Palestinian Authority. And the Palestinian Authority says, fine, but we want to be invited by Hamas. And it's like this weird thing. And it's like, and like we'd like the car involved, and we'd like this involved. And then so it's like this whole thing where it's like weird diplomatic, we need to be respectful, and that's why it is so messy right now. And also the Israelis just can't get their, they can't get it straight what they want to do. Do they want to just all out win the war? There's a big constituency in Israel who wants that, but there's a growing one who just wants it to be over and they just want the hostages back. And so what do you?
Yeah, what do you do at the end of it? It's the same, you know, challenge, kind of very similar challenge that you're having in with Ukraine.
Yeah, like our government, like we think about Trump acts unilaterally a lot of the time because he's our commander in chief. That's just not how it works in Israel. Like people, it sounds like it because people, oh, Bibi Netanyahu's bad government all the time. But really, it's, I mean, he doesn't get to make unilateral moves. His security establishment has been at, like, against him this whole time. The courts have been against him this whole time. Oh, he doesn't. It's not apples to apples with, like, how he's able to act.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about foreign policy. And a lot of our listeners know that I have a, I'm chronically online and consuming things. And speaking of people being upset, policy, you know, peace deals, many of us know that the president has taken over or federalized D.C., and I just wanted to share this video because I think it's freaking hilarious. And right now there's this entire debate in D.C. about the bad police, the good police, whether they're wanted there or not. So for our viewers, you guys also will get to join. And I want to see you guys, your reaction to what I am calling the Subway sandwich assault. So this dude is animatedly speaking to this officer, throws a Subway sandwich at him and bolts. Okay. Look at this man run. Oh, here's the deal. Not only has this guy thrown he's literally in front of a Subway. So I promise you it is a Subway sandwich. So this isn't even a good sandwich. This is a Subway sandwich. He is yelling at this officer. He chucks it at the officer and then bolts like a loser. Okay. He is now facing a felony charge for assaulting a federal officer. He has been charged and reports are that he worked at the DOJ. I don't know in what capacity, but he doesn't anymore. He has been fired. Amanda, would you chuck a sandwich at?
I would never do that, but like to face federal charges for such a lame thing. Like, I don't, it looked really lame to throw a sandwich and then just like prance away. Like, what did you really accomplish there?
Well, that is the state of DC right now. Last night, there was also, I think it was around 14th Street, there was a bunch of protests and they're chucking sandwiches. What I have noticed is that predominantly the groups that are protesting are majority white, which is not surprising. But we'll see what develops. I just thought it would be fun to get your reactions on the Subway sandwich assault.
I'm going to tweet about that now. That was crazy.
Well, I shared it. We were talking about it in the chat and you guys were all kind of like, I don't think either one of you had seen it, right? And I was like, okay, now I'll just have to show it to you.
No, I'm really glad I saw that. I mean, there's something going on in the atmosphere right now because there's a lot of weird stuff going on with like the sandwich guy, the lady who fell in love with her psychiatrist and is just like crashing out every day on TikTok Live about it.
Yeah, well, that's the symptom of being chronically online. Like, it's just that people are crazy. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and start wrapping this up for today's episode of Rivera and Reads. Amanda, thank you so much for hanging out with us and kind of giving us a rundown on what is happening in the world geopolitically. My dogs already know that I'm about to get off because they're all getting very rambunctious. So I'm going to go ahead and close this up. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll be keeping an eye on this meeting tomorrow. Everyone remember 3:30. It's going to be a big deal. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I would like something to move along just because I'd like to see an end to this conflict, to both conflicts, frankly, so we can kind of move on to other business, especially here domestically. So keep that meeting in your prayers. And that's it. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure that you check out our show notes so you can follow Amanda. She is on Substack. She is on TikTok. She is on Instagram and she's on X. All of those links are in the show notes. And she also has a true crime podcast. So
thank you. Yes.
If you're into that, you got in your second or third episode right now.
Yep. Right? I just released the second. This girl's crazy. The girl that this season is about is nuts. She's wild. So, I mean, if people want a respite from the news, you might like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Also include that link in the show notes. So make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. And in the meantime, here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Corporate megastores are spending millions lobbying DC politicians on one-sided policies that send small businesses tumbling. They want to enact harmful credit card mandates that take resources away from your local credit union and community bank, leaving Main Street businesses with less access to credit, making it harder for your family to pay for everyday goods like gas and groceries. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.